Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 a.m. This is Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 45 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Thursday, May 8th, 2014. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. The last 5 days of the 28th legislature were a scramble to get bills out the door. Two items of particular interest to the residents of Senator Bert Stedman's district passed literally in the 11th hour. Stedman met recently with KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz to cover some of the major issues of the session.
For Bert Stedman, it all came down to the final day of the legislative session. That was when the House voted on two issues that Stedman views as key for the economy of Southeast Alaska: language authorizing Sitka to apply for a state loan to finish the Blue Lake Hydro Project, and a green light for financing of two mines on Prince of Wales Island. Both issues were attached as amendments to a larger bill, SB 99. The House passed that bill on Friday, April 25th, in literally the final hours of the two-year legislature. Stedman says it wasn't supposed to come down to the wire.
It's not a good strategy to have some of the most key economic issues over a two-year session for, you know, your area all on one bill in the final moments of the legislature. It's not how you plan things, but sometimes your friends help you position yourself to have that accomplished.
This might not have happened in previous legislatures when Stedman was co-chair of the powerful Senate Finance Committee. He held that post as part of the bipartisan majority that governed for 6 years until 2012, when Republicans won an outright majority in the state Senate. I asked if it was frustrating to lose the chairmanship.
It's extremely rare to have someone from Southeast chair or co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee. And Lyman Hoffman was my co-chair in 6 years straight as a state record. You know, you can't expect to be chairman of that committee, you know, till you retire. I mean, that's just not something you should expect.
And Stedman said Southeast might need to get used to having less power in Juneau. He said the bipartisan coalition, which empowered coastal lawmakers, is unlikely to return.
I would say that would, you know, it'd be nice, but I wouldn't expect it. We used to have a senator from Sitka, one from Petersburg-Wrangell, one from Ketchikan, and one from Juneau. Four of us, four senators in Southeast. Now we have two. 10 years from now, my expectation is we'll have one and a half.
That's largely because of population growth in the rail belt. Stedman has long said that the biggest divide in Alaska is not Republican versus Democrat, but urban versus rural, the rail belt versus the coast.
And there is a difference in political philosophy amongst islands. And I don't know if we're just secluded, if we're the older part of the state, a little more mature and some of our viewpoints. We have, I think, a little longevity of Alaskans, and our economic interests don't correlate as tight. As an example, as I said here in Raven Radio, and I look out at the trawlers sitting in other boats in A and B Harbor, you know, there's a vast amount of trolling poles sticking up in the air. You don't see that in Anchorage. What you see in Anchorage is a discussion on oil and hydrocarbons.
About those hydrocarbons, Stedman supports the repeal of SB 21, the new oil tax regime passed in 2013, which he argues tilted the playing field too far towards the interests of oil companies. This year, he presented his own oil tax bill, SB 192, which would raise the minimum tax on oil companies and reduce credits. The bill didn't move out of the Senate Resources Committee. Stedman says Alaska's relationship with its oil producers is now in the hands of voters.
I think that one of the things that people in the discussion should remember, before you go to the polls here in August and express your opinion, is that we're an ownership state and we own the oil. And the tax mechanism that is just a methodology for us to put a sale price on the hydrocarbon. And as the only state in the union that owns the subsurface, Alaska is different, and we the people need to stand up for our ownership rights, because if we don't stand up for them, I can guarantee you no one else is going to.
Stedman also introduced a resolution urging the U.S. Congress to transfer land in the Tongass National Forest to the state. He says he'd like to see more access to the Tongass for everything from recreational cabins to second-growth timber sales. Stedman says state control of the land would be an economic shot in the arm for Southeast.
It's not a park. You know, people should have access to it.
Stedman says state control of the land would be an economic shot in the arm for Southeast.
You know, we're not the park for Rhode Island or New Jersey. You know, maybe we should have New York go back to the way it was 200 years ago. See what they think about that.
Yeah. I don't really want the Tongass to look like New Jersey, though. I'm from New Jersey.
Well, we're not worried. The Tongass is going to look like New Jersey. We're not crazy. We're not doing anything like that.
The Tongass resolution passed both houses of the legislature and is now waiting for the governor's signature. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
The Togiak sacro herring fishery looks likely to surpass the size of the Sitka harvest again. Both seiners and gill netters target Togiak herring. They've hit 17,000 tons so far and are still fishing. Mike Mason reports from Dillingham.
On Tuesday, over 1.9 thousand tons of herring were harvested, and the roe percentage of the fish harvested by the gillnet fleet was 11.86%. That's the highest percentage recorded so far in the fishery, which is now in its second week. Tim Sands is the ADF&G area management biologist, and he took another look at the district on Wednesday.
We definitely saw a lot of fish in Togiak Bay and a lot of fish right off Kalukuk Bay. And the fish off Kalukuk Bay looked, you know, they're nice, tight schools, very dark. Typically to us, that's a sign that they're new fish. They look like new fish to us. There's definitely fish along Kalukuk Bluffs where the people were fishing. A little bit of spawn, kind of a little bit west of Medervik Bay, some spawn on Summit Island. Not a lot of fish in between, like Right Hand Point and Togiak Bay. We didn't see a whole lot. And then that big school in Togiak Bay, then not a lot until out by Cape Pierce. There was some spawn out that way. And that's where most of the same fleet was out by Cape Pierce.
Through Tuesday, the total harvest in the fishery was over 16.9 thousand tons, which is still over 10 thousand tons short of the available quota of 27.8 thousand tons of herring. It's unlikely the whole quota will be taken this year, but Sands anticipates the processors will get as much herring as they need.
We're taking 1,500, 2,000 tons a day if things hold up. Couple more days of that and we'll get over 20. How long it lasts remains to be seen.
Sands confirms that so far all six processors are still buying herring, and he has not heard of any fishermen calling it quits. The Togiak sacro herring fishery is currently open until further notice, but the fishery will likely come to a halt in the coming days as the herring spawn, making it more difficult for fishermen to find harvestable fish. In years past, many of the processors and fishermen that participated in the Togiak sacro herring fishery would go around Cape Newenham and participate in the much smaller herring fishery in Security Cove. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game confirms that currently there are no processors registered to purchase herring in Security Cove, and the department is not anticipating a commercial fishery due to the lack of industry interest. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
And state transportation officials agree. A burst water pipe likely caused the Skagway ferry dock to sink last month. Repairs continue in hopes of getting the dock operational and resuming ferry service within the next week. The dock sank April 24th. Skagway Mayor Mark Schaefer said the city early on suspected a burst pipe was the culprit. A pipe running from the terminal to the dock supplies potable water to ferries tied up there. Schaefer said the city noticed a spike in city water use in the hours leading up to the sinking and assumed the pipe had burst. It flooded most of the 24 hollow concrete chambers that keep the dock afloat. On Monday, the State Department of Transportation concurred. Jeremy Woodrow is a DOT spokesperson.
I mean, we acknowledge that it happened and that's a leading cause, but we can't rule anything out until there's been a full inspection and a full report done at the end.
The dock is now floating again. Woodrow said the state is continuing to make repairs and some modifications.
They're doing temporary fixes right now, so those could be considered modifications. They actually can't do or actually won't do a whole lot of major changes to the dock because there actually is a refurbishment project that's in the works to do some major work to the dock in the near future.
Woodrow says it's not yet known how much the salvage and repairs from the sinking will cost the state. The Skagway Assembly last week received a request from the state to approve a replacement to the water pipe valve near the ferry terminal. At that meeting, the Assembly decided to pay for and replace the valve on its own. This kind of cost sharing illustrates an odd arrangement the state and Skagway have with the dock. Unlike any other Alaska Marine Highway Ferry System dock in the state, the city is 5/12 owner. That stems from an agreement when the dock was built more than 30 years ago. At that time, the state could not afford the total cost of constructing the dock, so Skagway paid a portion. The city and state have a user agreement, allowing the city to use or lease one side of the dock for tugs, barges, and even small cruise ships. But under the agreement, the state pays to maintain the dock. That's why Woodrow says even though the pipe that burst is owned by the city, the state is willing to pay for repairs.
We're working very closely with the city because they are partial owners of the dock itself.
The state is hoping to resume ferry service to Skagway on May 11th. A final decision on that timeline will be made later this week. And that's all for Raven News for this morning. We're coming up on 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can listen to or read most Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. To read comments on our stories on Facebook, click on the Facebook link. No registration or login is required. And to have KCAW News headlines tweeted directly to your smartphone, tablet, or computer, click on the Twitter link. It's 45 degrees in downtown Sitka under overcast skies and occasional rain. Should be overcast and rainy throughout Raven Radio's listening region today, with the best chance of rain in Sitka and Port Alexander, and temperatures in the mid to upper 50s. In Sitka and Port Alexander specifically, rain is likely today with highs around 55. Light and variable winds becoming northeast, 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Expect decreasing clouds tonight with a chance of rain, lows around 44, and north winds 10 miles per hour. And it should be partly cloudy tomorrow with highs around 60. We're coming up on 1 minute after 8 a.m. NPR's Morning Edition is next. Then at 8:18 this morning, I'll be speaking with Deb Lyons and Bill Foster about the upcoming Trailworks hike to Sea Lion Cove. I hope you can join us for that. In 26 minutes, we'll have a 7-foot high tide, then at 2:50 this afternoon, a 2.1-foot low tide, and at 9:32 tonight, a 7.9-foot high tide. The sun rose this morning at 4:47. It will set at 9:05 tonight. That's 16 hours and 18 minutes of daylight, and a gain of 4 minutes and 33 seconds over yesterday. Well, it's just about 8:01. This is KCAW Sitka. Stay tuned for NPR. I'll be back shortly. Good morning.